I'm Kathleen Dunn. This hour, we're going to look at the future of the Great Lakes region. We'll look at the region's past and the future challenges and promise. Of course, the big news from this area in which we live is that for a number of years, the manufacturing jobs loss in this region was very, very big. Those jobs fell 35%, 1.6 million jobs. But overall, we've added jobs, 1.2 million, not as many to make up for those that we lost, but still added 1.2 million jobs from 2000 to 2015. What about those new jobs? What are they? How do we keep young people and families happy here? What about the immigrant population in the Rust Belt? There's a new report from the Urban Institute looking at today's economic, demographic, and social trends in the Great Lakes region, which of course includes those of us who live here in Wisconsin. And we're delighted to have Erica Pothig with us this hour, an Institute Fellow and Director of Urban Policy Initiatives at the Urban Institute. She leads the Policy Advisory Group, and they assemble urban experts to help leaders draw insights from research and also to navigate policy challenges that are facing urban America. It's a very important report. Of course, one of the other big things we have is this huge body of water, which would seem to me would indicate that it might be pretty darned important in the years ahead and maybe an attraction for people to move to this area. So, the Great Lakes, otherwise known by some as the Rust Belt area. What's the future? We welcome phone calls during the course of the hour for Erica. The number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. I'm interested in your personal experiences, too. Maybe some of you have left the area or your children have left the area and they've gone to places where, you know, the sun is shining more often, perhaps, or the jobs are more plentiful or may pay better, so we can learn things from other areas. Or there's also this draw to the Midwest because it's such a solid place to live. Nice values, good people, not too many people full of themselves. That it's an attractive place for a lot of people. It's home. It's where we want to be. So why is that? What makes it where you want to be? We welcome all of those phone calls. Erica, thank you very much for having done the report, and thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, Kathleen, I'm so pleased to be invited to talk to you and your listeners today. Thanks so much for the invitation.
Yeah, our pleasure. It's an important topic. Can we start with these manufacturing jobs that were lost? Mm-hmm. We can see it certainly here in the city of Milwaukee. We lost a whole lot of jobs, good-paying jobs. You write in the report that remaining industries will still be a major source of employment and high wages. Can you talk about the past, the present, and the future in that regard? What did we lose? What's here that's still very worthwhile, and what might be here?
Yeah, thank you. And thanks for your interest in the report. And as you led off with your description, just to orient people, what the Great Lakes states are in our report, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Minnesota, Ohio, and Wisconsin, which is not to leave out Western New York and Western Pennsylvania, but for the purposes of this report, those are the states we were looking at, and the report does look at them in the totality, but I'm going to break out Wisconsin.
Okay.
Also, and some trends that are happening in Wisconsin, where it diverges, where it aligns with some of those trends in the larger region. And I would say, just in respect to the more recent rhetoric about what is happening in the Great Lakes, the region's often been portrayed as a victim of global forces, particularly in relationship to the loss of manufacturing, which, as you noted and we note in our report, has been significant in terms of the major losses that have been more recent versus the losses that occurred in the 70s and 80s, which also left great pain, too, in mm-hmm. the economy. So I think one of the things I would just say overall that we are trying to get across in the report is that although it is true that global forces have been affecting the region's trajectory, the region also has some considerable strengths, and that we need to look for the answers for its future in those strengths and not just, I think, scapegoat the other challenges that have forced job loss. So that's one of the spirits of the report, and so I'm going to try to anchor my comments as much in that
sure.
as possible.
Great.
So One thing to know about the job loss is that Wisconsin, in the region, about 13.3% of jobs in Wisconsin are in manufacturing. There is second highest behind Indiana, which is 14%, and that's as of 2015. And in the period that we look at, the more recent period, 2000 to 2010, in the region, people in Michigan were most affected, which may not be a surprise. And Wisconsin was a bit less so affected by the loss in manufacturing because it offset job losses in manufacturing with job growth in other sectors. Since the end of the recession, or paused, manufacturing jobs have risen, but below their previous level. And then Wisconsin is lagging the region's overall growth in manufacturing jobs. So where is its growth in jobs coming from? Well, interestingly, I think there are two ways of looking at this. One is where the higher wage jobs are coming from and where the lower or medium wage jobs coming from.
Sure.
So before the recession, Wisconsin, in comparison to other Great Lakes states, saw a surge in the increase of management jobs, well exceeding the overall averages for the Great Lakes states. So that was a major contribution to new job growth in the state. At the lower and medium wage end of the spectrum, most of the growth came in real estate jobs, and then also in educational services. But interestingly, though Wisconsin gained in educational services job, it lagged the region overall, which saw quite a significant increase in those particular jobs. So then what happened after the recession from 2010 to 2015? Well, again, job growth not as robust, but the places where the region continues to grow, in Wisconsin in particularly, management is still a strong leader in the job growth for the state. Job losses are happening in finance, interestingly. And this, I think, is particularly important since the largest employer in the state is the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Wisconsin is not quite keeping up with the rest of the Great Lakes states in professional technical services. So those are some of the, gives you a character or a sense of the kinds of flows, inflows and outflows of jobs.
Mm-hmm. What about people? You talk about the University of Wisconsin-Madison. We have a lot of universities in the state. What about the population in this area? Are we losing people to the Sun Belt, to the West? Are young people, once they graduate, staying in the state? Is there a brain drain? What do we do to keep people here?
Yeah, so important. So we don't, in this report, track where people are going, but it is absolutely true that people are, in fact, leaving. And let me just talk about the components of demographic change for a moment so you have a sense of how we do track that. So demographic change happens in a number of different categories, right? There are people who are born. That's one part of demographic change. There are people who migrate to the state. That's another part of what adds to the positive part of the ledger. And then what happens when you and that could be in-migration from other parts of the United States or immigration, right, from other countries.
Mm-hmm.
I would say more generally right now, people are moving less than they used to. So any kind of increase in population is about retaining who already lives there today and supporting families to have more children. That's one of the, toward looking to the future, one of the main important strategies that we point to. It also says that perhaps people may leave the state less than they used to because overall mobility rates have gone down. In terms of when you lose population, can you attribute that to? Well, you can definitely attribute that to people moving to neighboring states, and there is definitely a flow of people out of Wisconsin to Minnesota or Illinois or maybe Iowa. But it is also true that people pass away. And I think one of the important factors for Wisconsin and for the Great Lakes overall to really be thinking about is the aging of the population in the region.
Right.
The region is older, if you will, than the rest of the United States as a region. And will continue to be one of the oldest regions in the country. And most of the population growth in the next 15 years comes from the aging population. So if a state is thinking about how it wants to grow, it needs to be thinking about how it is helping to keep people here, especially younger people, and how it's supporting young people who are being born in the state so that they want to stay. If that happens, then I think you will see people attracted to coming back to the region, and you will see people see the region as a place they want to be, too.
Mm-hmm. What about the immigrant population in this part of the world? Is it important to have a thriving immigrant population?
Absolutely. It is one of the most important aspects of what I think constitutes the future for the U.S. overall, but particularly for the Great Lakes states. And it's also important that communities in the region promote policies that help to integrate immigrants, incorporate them in the community. Chicago, just to the south, is one of the most diverse regions and cities in the United States in terms of its constellation of immigrants and also the distribution of African Americans and whites. Wisconsin, less so. And I think one of the things that Wisconsin may need to look to are what are the policy, strategy, signals it's sending to immigrants as being a location where they will want to put down roots. And there are different ways in which to do that, but I think that's vastly important. If you look at Milwaukee, for instance, which does have a growing Latino population, a lot of the growth for Milwaukee and for the state overall is actually going to come from Latinos in the future.
Mm-hmm. Are there other, and have you been able to look at a kind of a state-by-state comparison? When you talk about Wisconsin doing one thing and other states may be better in some regards than we are there are really substantial policy differences between states like Wisconsin and states like Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Have you found that because of the treatment of immigrants or job, special kinds of incentives for job growth, that there are some states in this area that really don't have to worry much about their futures because they're doing splendidly?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Minnesota. Minnesota, by far, in our analysis, probably has the brightest future among the Great Lakes states, and I think you can point to a number of different factors there. Certainly, some of the work they've done to incorporate immigrant populations as a part of that strategy, and some of the policies that they have promoted to invest in education and family policy, too, I would point to as being one of the things that make it a place people want to live and grow and keep their families, which is not to say that there hasn't been out-migration from Minnesota, too. Again, some of this maps to general trends as well, that Minnesota is in some ways is affected by other states for these particular reasons. But a lot of it is what signals are the policymakers sending about the future of the state and where it wants to be. One of the things we point to in the report, we think an asset that is maybe under-leveraged, under-appreciated for all the states are the Big Ten universities. Mm-hmm. And you have absolutely one of the most, important Big Ten universities in the University of Wisconsin-Madison. As I said, largest employer in the state. What signals is the state sending about its investment in the university and the extension systems and the other parts of the system that are sending a signal that we're investing in the mobility of our young people, not just just inside the state, but also externally, too. It's a best opportunity to potentially retain those young people in the state as
right.
well. And the extent to which the state is sending signals that it is, you know, less than supportive of higher education as an asset, that is easily read, I think, by people who have choices about where to move and where to locate. So we see higher ed policy as being incredibly important part of the Great Lakes future overall. Mm-hmm. And I would say that would be true for Wisconsin as well.
You also say more workers will have associate and four-year college degrees, but you look at this increase will be held back, the report says, by disparities between African Americans and Hispanics on one hand and whites and Asians on the other. A perennial problem.
Yeah, perennial. So these have to do with the achievement gaps between people of color and whites and Asians. And, you know, they are in the report. We have a graph that shows the increasingly that this isn't going to be an area for growth in the region, that there you will see evidence of more people attaining these degrees, but definitely the lag for African Americans and Hispanics is very real, and we say needs to be addressed for the region overall, because I think this region lags the country in its diversity. So in 20 years, one of the things we point to is this region will be as diverse as the country is today. And so one of the challenges is that it's playing catch up with a lot of other parts of the United States that have already worked to support greater inclusion and diversity in their strategies. And so it can look to other places to see how to promote more inclusive policies. But one of the things these states, and I would say this would be true for Wisconsin, needs to figure out how to create ladders of opportunity for the young people of color in the state, and not create sort of barriers to that opportunity.
We're going to welcome phone calls. We're talking about this new report from the Urban Institute, which looks at the economic, the demographic, and the social trends in the Great Lakes region, and it includes Wisconsin. We're looking at how we can make this area more attractive so that people will have decent-paying jobs. People will be highly educated. They will enjoy the beauty of this area, decide to raise their families here, and then their families, many of them, will decide this is a good place to live, and thus the region will thrive. What are the barriers from that kind of idealistically described future, and what kinds of policies need to be put in place to allow people to have lives where they have a decent income and good futures? We are speaking this hour of the program with Erica Pothig. She's an institute fellow at the Urban Institute and director of Urban Policy Initiatives, and we'll be welcoming phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk@wpr.org. Facebook is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is @KDunnShow. What do you think about the Great Lakes region? What would it take? What do we need? What do we have? And where should we be going? We'd love to hear from you about this. Why do you live here? Are you happy you live here? What could be better? 800-486-8655 is the number. We'll be with you in a moment on the Ideas Network. All right, let's go to phone calls now for Erica. 800-486-8655. Why do you live in the Great Lakes region, those of you who are here? What could make it better? What could make people want to live here and make it even more sustainable? Courtney in Green Bay is our first caller for you, Eric. Erica, hi, Courtney.
Hi, thank you for taking my phone call.
Sure.
My question is what can we do to improve the Upper Peninsula? I lived up there the last 5 years, and over the last 5 years, I have seen a significant decline in jobs, and I've seen a lot of businesses close up, but I've also seen an increase in drug activity. It's pretty bad up there, and it's almost like a black hole, and I'm wondering, what can we do to increase jobs up there and make that situation better?
And the report looks at rural areas and not too populated areas in the Great Lakes. Erica?
It sure does. And thank you, Courtney, for that question. And I would say, having driven through the Upper Peninsula, one of the intrinsic values, of course, is its beauty and its natural resources. And that's in part how I think that economy was established many years ago. And I think one of the tensions it faces with today is the extent to which there is demand for those natural resources that I think have helped to contribute and build its economy. So you mentioned, Courtney, the issue related to drug addiction, and we point to in our report, as Kathleen said, we don't just talk about major metropolitan areas. We also talk about the fact that these challenges exist in rural and suburban areas, and every county seat, for instance, in a state, is also feeling some stress as well from the losses of jobs and manufacturing. And that can create stress. And I think that stress and that sense of what a lack of a sense of what the future holds is what creates the condition for people to turn to opioids and drug addiction. And one of the things we point to in the report is the need for the states maybe collectively to figure out strategies to take opioid addiction on head on, not just through preventive strategies, but perhaps more collectively focusing on the ultimate sources of those of the pipeline of opioids that are coming into the parts of the region. But at the underlying basis of this, I think you note this in your question, Courtney, that this kind of addiction is coming from the sense of a lack of future. And there, too, I think I would turn to the strategies that we suggest focused on how to leverage the pipeline of folks into college and extension services and education, how to equip people with the skills to attain jobs that might be in the region. I think in the course of doing this report, one of the things that we heard from a number of policymakers is a sense that, and it's true, that there are jobs, but that folks don't come to those jobs necessarily either prepared, or that one of the things they are absolutely picking up on in the course of screening people for employment is drug. I think ultimately the core issue here is skill development and education as a core strategy for folks to be attractive to employers who might locate in the region.
Well, what about those employers? I'm wondering who's moving to those parts of the country. When you look at what's happening in rural areas, small family farms are just going out of business. They're big agribusinesses now. How can you make a living in a very small town that you like very much, and maybe it's been part of your family for a long time, but what do you do?
Yeah, so I appreciate that question very much. And I think one of the things that's happening in the larger kind of structural shift in the economy is that we are moving away from people are working, but they aren't employed. What do I mean by that? Increasingly, people are working for themselves as contractors, or they have small businesses that they run. And this is, you know, the agricultural farms and so forth are a good indication of this. And I think this is a larger trend that I would fully expect is part of also the trends going on elsewhere in the state. Every summer I go up to Oconee County, Lakewood, Wisconsin.
Oh, you do?
I do. We have been going there since I was a baby, but my family's been going there for 100 years.
Ah.
And so I've seen that town shift and change over many decades. And one of the things I think, you know, that town has repositioned itself from being a town centered on obviously the logging industry from its origins to tapping other kinds of natural resources to now being a destination for recreation, right, all year round. But around that are a set of small businesses that are anchoring the area, and primarily these are folks who are sole proprietors, right? Or they are, in some cases, employers too. I think one of the observations that I've made in my experience of going to that rural part of the state for many years is the importance of anchors. And I mentioned education in the past, but I want to name also the other anchors that I observe in a place like Lakewood, which is the federally funded healthcare clinic, which not only provides healthcare services, but serves as a hub for the community, for other access to resources and vibrancy. And the other place is the library. And I think if you think about these two kinds of nodes, you think about rebuilding an economy or a sense of community and vibrancy around those kinds of public services, they can have residual and redounding effects that can be supportive of a network in the community, but can also be, I think, places where people can come together and be less isolated. And I think that's, you know, the large part of our report is this need to support greater inclusion and spaces for people to come together, in part to build this more positive narrative about the future that if you build it, I think people will come.
I'm so glad you mentioned libraries.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, it's a wonderful, I mean, I go there every day when I'm there, and not just for the internet service or the book, but for the community, in fact.
Right.
And I see that in other people as well.
Thanks, Courtney, for your call. Ashley in Milwaukee is next. Hi, Ashley.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I actually recently moved back to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, after being in the Bay Area and briefly in North Carolina since 2008. I've been so disappointed to see the lack of progress here. The city is as segregated as ever, but in looking at the rising rent costs and the seemingly flat wages, my husband and I are finding it difficult as, you know, potential employees who both have master's degrees to not be able to find work here or work that provides enough pay for us to raise our daughter, save for retirement, and create a life here. So we moved back hoping to find stability in Milwaukee, be closer to family. And we're really struggling to find employment that pays enough money to sustain us, even though we have, you know, master's degrees and have gone the education route. And we keep hearing from everyone that, you know, there are so many jobs here, manufacturing and technology, but we really just haven't seen that.
And have you found, was San Francisco the last place you were, Ashley, or North Carolina?
I was in Oakland last. So we were in
Oakland.
San Francisco. I got my master's in North Carolina, and then back out to Oakland, and here we are back in Milwaukee.
Well, the price of living must be, when you think about San Francisco and how much it is to house yourself in Milwaukee, the difference must be incredible, isn't it?
It is, but in North Carolina, you know, the wages for my profession, which is counseling, were similar to here in Milwaukee, but we paid $700 a month for a house rental.
I see. Right.
Here in Milwaukee, we're paying $1,300.
Right. What can be done about that, Erica? Young family wants to make the region grow again.
Yeah, no, well, I'm excited to hear that, and not so excited to hear that Ashley's having a tough time finding a position. You know, it's interesting, she notes the wages, which I would agree are definitely probably low in comparison to her experience in the Bay Area. I think one of the challenges the region faces overall, and this would be true for Wisconsin as well, is that the inflation-adjusted household incomes in all six states are lower than they were in 2000. And so this probably incredible growth that Ashley saw in the Bay Area, you know, has taken a big step back in the Great Lakes region. So just as an example, in 2000, the median household income in Wisconsin was $60,000. Approximately, and in 2015 it was $55,000. So she's really, I think, naming a big challenge that the state has not recovered from the recession and lags, I think, considerably the other, definitely the Bay Area, in the kinds of wages that you can capture for your skills. So I heard her also say, though, that, and I think she was talking about Milwaukee, that there are also rising rents. And you would imagine, well, there's a reputation that the city has or the state has more affordable living standards, right, than certainly the Bay Area. And so I think one of the things she's capturing in the housing costs is something that has also been overlooked, which is there's more demand for rental housing also post the recession. And we are not producing sufficient amounts of rental housing to keep pace with demand, and that puts pressure on rents.
Mm-hmm.
And so that makes it probably for her household also takes up a larger share than she probably expected of her income.
Mm-hmm.
So those two twin factors, which may be playing themselves out in the region, are definitely creating pressure. I mean, these are, you know, there are things that the policymakers can in part do about the housing situation to try to stimulate greater growth in the supply of housing so that it can adjust for the rising rents. From an income perspective, it is about, I think, getting and attracting significant anchors to the region. And, you know, Milwaukee, I think, as you know, is the most segregated region.
Yes.
In the country. And Ashley also mentioned this. And we have another report that came out last week called The Cost of Segregation, where we estimated what the costs are to Chicago in particular, but also derived that for other cities overall. And in our metrics, Milwaukee was the number one for black and white segregation. And, you know, segregation costs income. So this is one of the things I think she may be seeing. It's affecting the overall incomes of people in the region. It costs lives. It is associated with higher homicide rates and a loss in prosperity for people. It really affects the long-term educational outcomes as well. So one of the challenges I would point to that Ashley sort of, I would say, uncovered in her remarks is the role that segregation is playing in Milwaukee, maybe holding it, not only is holding it back from broader prosperity.
Well, all the best to you, Ashley. I hope you nail something, because the quality of life, you know, despite all its problems, it's a very good city, I think. It's a good area, and a lot of younger people are moving here. I hope you can land something, you and your husband, that will be what you need.
Thank you so much. We hope so, too.
Yeah, thanks so much for your call. Mike and Nick is next in Germantown. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I think one of the issues we have in the state right now is our conservative political climate, because it's not encouraging any progressive thought or growth or entrepreneurship, anything like that. If you think about like true entrepreneurs and people that start businesses and so on, whether it be, you know, Harley Davidson 100 years ago or Epic, you know, however many years ago, all of those people were progressive thinkers, and we're discouraging that right now in the state. Our policies are driving people away. We're taking money from education. If you're a young person, you're not going to make it known. You're not going to say much. You're just simply going to not move here or choose to live in another part of the country because of our political climate.
Does that make a difference, Erica, the political climate?
Our research doesn't focus on that, I would
right.
say. However, I would come back to something I said earlier, which is you send a lot of signals, right, by the policy choices you make. And the things that Wisconsin probably registered with people in the national news have to do with the tensions, the political tensions that Mike pointed to, right, the tensions with the labor unions and the state and educators, and the tensions with the University of Wisconsin-Madison over tenure and the ability to function as a university, or the investment in the university. These are the things that kind of rise up and resonate. And I think those can send signals to people about what are the policy directions that the state is taking, and that would most definitely probably affect some people's choices which to move. I mean, underlying that, I think, is the question about how the decision makers in the state see the future, and where do they see that future, who's creating that future. And I want to come back to, ultimately, we are very optimistic about the region and see all of its wonderful assets, and you've named more than once the lakes, which are, I believe, one of its greatest assets,
yes.
But not its only one, right?
Yes.
And we believe that there can be a homegrown regional recovery, but it means having a more positive narrative about the future, which means that the community needs to see itself rising together. And right now, I think there are tensions within the states, and certainly sometimes between the states in competition with each other. So there's a way in which the states themselves can see themselves coming together around some common core challenges. But then I would say within the state of Wisconsin, the state needs to come together and see that its future lies in the children that will be born today, that are here today. And, those will be children who are both white, but also children of color. And there needs to be an investment in their future, because the people who are aging in the state will need to rely upon those children, too, for a whole host of different reasons. And so the state itself needs to have a more kind of collective vision for where it wants to be and how it wants to invest its resources.
Thanks so much for your call, Mike. Let's go to Jan in Door County. Hi, Jan.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I wondered about the impact of property tax in regions. I live in beautiful Door County, and over 60% of our property tax bills leave our county. So we have property here that is owned by mainly residents who don't necessarily contribute to the economy other than property taxes here, and for just one season of the year when they actually reside here. So and it's been historical here, we have a lack of affordable housing for people who live in this county. And I just wonder, while it's a beautiful area to be in, and, we have so many wonderful things that we can experience culturally here, it's difficult for people to thrive in this county, and it's difficult to keep the young people here.
Erica.
Yeah. So I appreciate that question, and as a property taxpayer in Wisconsin who is one of those folks who is seasonal, I appreciate how much of Door County, which, again, beautiful part of the state, relies upon those folks who do spend their summers in Door County as both, part of what creates revenue and jobs for people during the season, but it also creates costs as well that have to be maintained, and you need to have folks who can afford to live there, stay there, in order to help support, the summertime businesses. So I think she's raising a really important point about the kinds of ways in which revenues and expenditures are structured in the state. And one of the things we point to in the report is the need to take a closer look at that, those trends, the ways in which population affects those trends, to really hone in on the allocation of resources appropriately where you're going to be able to support growth. And so what I heard in her question was, we need affordable housing because we need places for the people to live who can also stay here, have children here, and help support the economy here. And I think that's just a smart economic development decision. That's not even a question of equity. That's just smart policy.
I want to spend more time with Erica talking about preparing workers for what the report calls complex manufacturing jobs. We are, the report says, still the nation's durable manufacturing heartland. So how do we prepare people for those complex manufacturing jobs? And what exactly are those jobs? We'll talk about that as we continue. And welcome more of your phone calls. Some lines are open for you right now. Our guest is Erica Pothig. She's an Institute Fellow and Director of Urban Policy Initiatives at the Urban Institute. We're talking about their new report that looks at today's economic, demographic, social trends, our past, our present, and the future, possible future, of the Great Lakes region, which includes Wisconsin. What do you think about this region? What makes it an attractive place to live? What are the areas that are keeping us from growing? Have you moved back here from another part of the country? Have you left this area because you couldn't find a job here or for other reasons? Our number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is @KDunnShow, and this is the Ideas Network. Tell me about these manufacturing jobs, that the remaining industries will still be a source of employment, but it's a complex manufacturing job. What is meant by that in the report, Erica?
Sure. So, you know, I think when we think about manufacturing or traditional manufacturing, it was a very physical type of position. Increasingly, with automation, manufacturing is about working with computerized systems, and that are coded, that you are working with a machine, essentially, and it is the complexity of the position has to do with, I think, working with, seeing yourself as a computer technician rather than doing sort of purely physical labor, and that requires more multitasking and also learning a system that may be very particular to the company and the product being produced rather than maybe more transferable. And so it's that kind of complexity that is the future. And if we can see any sort of threat to future job losses, it's really from automation. And I think that, but those are still sort of future trends. Still today, though, there are opportunities for employment, but they do require more education, honestly. Sometimes that is provided by the employer through apprenticeships or through other kinds of partnerships with community colleges, but increasingly they do require higher levels of education in order for people to successfully get those jobs.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Dan and Spooner. Hi, Dan.
Hello.
Hi.
I couldn't agree more. I'm an HR manager for advanced manufacturing, and technology has taken away more jobs from the working class than globalization. You know, we have high-tech equipment. Our machinists make more money than teachers. We need people with tech colleges and degrees. About 70% of our jobs require a technical college, about 20% four-year university.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, we have machines that cost $1 million. A single program to make a part can be up to 500 pages long.
Wow.
That's very high tech. I mean, machinists are as skilled as nurses. And so that's where the jobs of the future are. And in fact, the numbers for manufacturing are deceiving because we can do more with fewer people. So it looks like manufacturing is going down, but actually there are more opportunities for advanced manufacturing for high-skilled people.
Mm-hmm.
They're just fewer jobs in total. We don't need low-skilled people. Those jobs went to China.
Erica.
Yeah, I mean, Dan hit the nail on the head. Exactly. Couldn't have said it better myself. And it's great to have the very specific example. And this is why I think increasingly employers are trying to partner with community college systems or engineering skills to make sure that the pipeline of people coming out of those programs are well equipped to go into these more advanced manufacturing jobs. I think one thing I would point to in relationship to the system is oftentimes we have very antiquated workforce development systems that are not keeping pace with the change. So employers are way ahead. Sometimes they're doing these apprenticeship programs themselves. They're not being mediated by the public sector. You know, Milwaukee has a very fragmented workforce development system. And I think I would point to, you know, opportunities for the city and the surrounding counties to partner more regionally and then really connect up with employers in terms of the pipeline and the community college systems to create that pipeline of folks that are equipped for the jobs. We heard 70% require technical degrees of some kind, and I think that is where the future is. It is really in these employer partnerships with community college systems, sometimes mediated with support from the workforce development boards that receive federal funding as a source, but we have to grow those kinds of partnerships in order to get the pipeline of people that are going to be equipped to take these jobs that Dan points out are high pay, right? That's why people love manufacturing, is because it is relatively high in pay. It's right. How people got into the middle class in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Dan, thanks so much for the call. Tina in Green Bay, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My husband and I are fourth and fifth generation Wisconsinites, and I think we stay because this is where we come from. This is our roots. This is where our family comes from. We know where our grandparents lived and grew up, and it's a comfort. And I think that's why a lot of people in the Midwest don't leave, even when jobs aren't great, even when the climate is terrible at times. We just stay because this is where we feel we belong, you know. And if I can ask that one, you know, one thing I'd love to see different about our state, and I think that holds us back, is we have terrible public transportation. I live west of Green Bay, and if I want to take a train, I have to drive to Milwaukee or towards Madison to get on a train to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. So it'd be nice to have some of those types of things in this area, and I think it would, you know, it would help to broaden us, you know, with people that come from the rural area to travel more and do those things, but to always come home then too, you know, because this is where we're from.
This is where your heart is. I understand that. And maybe the Midwest, I don't know, maybe other places have that, but the Midwest has a very strong sense of that. I don't know if other regions do or not, of being home. It's modest, you know, as Tina said, you have to work hard to stay warm in the winter. We go through some hardships. We're hardy. We're friendly. We have this reputation of being solid.
Yes. Well, I'm from Chicago. And I would say I see myself as a Midwesterner, and all the qualities that you described I think are absolutely true. And I left my heart in Chicago and call myself a Chicagoan in diaspora with the hopes of returning someday. And I think you see that among so many people from the Midwest.
Yes.
And who care great, even if you move, care deeply about its future, and you hope to return one day. I think, you know, the hope we have in this report is how to make sure it is a place where more people like Tina can stay generations and build their family and see their family prosper in places like Green Bay and Wisconsin and elsewhere around the region. And I think there is a path, there is a plan for a homegrown economic recovery to see the Midwest and the Great Lakes not just have been, you know, have its identity anchored in the past and its past role, but to have a future identified that is as prosperous as its past has been. And that may be centered on the Great Lakes itself as an asset. I'm excited about some of the work in Milwaukee that
yes.
is very oriented to the kinds of manufacturing centered around water and the identity of the brewers who, you know what water quality means, right, and how to leverage that for other kinds of industry. And to imagine maybe, and I've heard Mayor Barrett say, you know, maybe it's the Fresh Belt, right? There's a different
right.
way to imagine the future. And I think we hope this report creates a foundation for the region to come together around identifying that, but also the policies and approaches that help facilitate growing the region through its own strength rather than expecting that people, its future is in people moving here from out of state, right? Mm-hmm. How to keep people in the state and enable them to have families and thrive.
Right. Well, we're going to be the place where the water is, to name, right? Aren't we?
Right.
Where the water is.
Well, hopefully. I do think that is absolutely the truth, but we can't just wait for climate change to shift that. I think there are things that leaders in these states can do today that can make it a more attractive place for people to stay and live and thrive.
Which makes your report worth reading, definitely. Erica, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Kathleen. Really enjoyed the conversation with you and your listeners.
Thank you. So did we. Erica Pothig, Institute Fellow Director of Urban Policy Initiatives at the Urban Institute. And she was also Acting Assistant Secretary for Policy Development and Research at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development in the Obama administration, also Deputy Assistant Secretary for Policy Development, leading architect of the White House Council for Strong Cities and Strong Communities. Thanks to Chris Molina for producing this interesting show, Colleen Duvall for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. We're with you again tomorrow. Is Vladimir Putin an enemy, a villain? Hour one and hour two, music education.